somebody asked me the other day, they said, like, well, would you go back? And the answer has pretty much definitely become, I don't think so. And not because, like,
could you?
Not because I don't like WWE, or I don't like WrestleMania, or I don't like money, or I don't like the big production, because I am literally now incapable of taking direction. Nah. If you told me you're going to write something for me, no. If you told me you're going to produce something, no. If you give me a time and a finish, cool.
I may not even hit that.
But even that.
You guys don't.
Even that, I'm literally.
You guys don't.
Like, and I don't want to discourage. Like, yeah, you've got Arn. You guys. You've got Arn Anderson. You got Mike Rotunda. You got these guys out of respect for sure, but out of respect for myself, it's my song that I go out there to play.
You're like, your own shot.
Listen.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered my home.
You like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have 2 more hours of this.
SmackDown sucks. It's almost as bad as Raw.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster, who are you to doubt El Dandy?
You know, there are weeks where I look at my agenda for the show and I go, how am I going to get an hour out of this stuff, let alone two? What a boring week of news. This was not one of those weeks. From yesterday's Elimination Chamber to Bobby Lashley's injury to Cody and Brandi Rhodes leaving AEW to the possibility of Stone Cold Steve Austin returning to the ring and The Undertaker in the Hall of Fame. Where, oh where, do I even begin? Thank God it's Sunday. This is episode 744 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for February 20th, 2022. I am the Solo Monster. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you guys know where to go, thesolomonster.com. You'll see the button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. We do our PayPal producers roll call here at the beginning of every show, so I can shout out all these fine folks, like the Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton. I was so excited to be able to talk to Paul on the phone the other night. We did our call-in show for channel members on YouTube, and he was the very last, he got in right at the very last moment. We got to talk to him, that was great. So I hope he's doing well. Night Stalker, Nayef Al-Safar, John Loose Cannon Lopez. Good to hear from him. Awesome, Anthony Angiano. Holy shit, Anthony. Thank you for the support. Big B, Brian Becerra. Out of Control, Cody Thomas. Killshot, Keith Hart. Beast Mode, Brock Joseph. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard. The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soap. New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, the Firebomber, Craig Foster, John Raging Mad Riffle, Caleb Showtime Lindley, and the Chosen Son, Andre Smith. I did do the latest edition of Better Call Saul Monster Thursday night. Opened the phone lines up, ended up going over 2 hours. And we had some great calls, not only from Paul, but from a whole bunch of people. You guys put a smile on my face after a horrible day on Thursday. So that's up in the archives for channel members. I know we got a bunch of new ones after yesterday, and so that is accessible for all of you right now. And also, I want to just give a quick plug, because this Thursday, the 24th, it's looking like 8 p.m., I'm going to be making an appearance on Don Tony's YouTube channel. We're going to have a conversation with the Don. It's going to be the Don. It's going to be myself together doing a show on his channel for the very first time. Apparently, this is something that a lot of people have been wanting for a while and told him that they wanted him to make it happen. I said, let's do it. And so it's all going down. Thursday night, the 24th, 8 p.m. over on his channel. Look for Don Tony on YouTube. And congratulations are in order for Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae on the birth of their son, Quill Gargano, on Thursday. I loved the picture of the baby with the Star-Lord comic book propped up in the background behind him. Named after Peter Quill from the Guardians of the Galaxy. And now the discussion will commence about where Gargano will land, because he said he's not going to do anything until the baby is born. Well, the baby is now here. So let the speculation begin on what the future looks like for Johnny Gargano. But WWE had its Elimination Chamber event in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, for the first time yesterday, The Chamber, on one of these Saudi shows. A show that was rumored all week long. All I read about online, twists and turns, major twists and turns planned for the road to WrestleMania here at this show. And what it ended up being was one of the more predictable WWE shows. A pretty mid show overall. Although you guys thought it was a thumbs down show. I don't even think the show got 20% thumbs up in the poll on Twitter. I thought it was very mid. Brock Lesnar is the WWE champion, which I knew he would be the moment he was inserted into the match. You had to know he was not losing on back-to-back pay-per-views. Becky Lynch is still the Raw Women's Champion, which she had to be. To get to her and Bianca Belair at WrestleMania, Bianca will challenge Becky Lynch by virtue of her winning the Women's Elimination Chamber match. And Roman Reigns, Goldberged Goldberg, just like he said he would in Big Bill's final match for now. That was the last match on his contract. To retain the Universal Championship, I knew my trusty voodoo doll would come in handy. I had to resort to a little bit of black magic. I didn't trust them, so you're welcome. And much love to Fawaz out there in Saudi for the sound-off sign that was visible all throughout the show. That's the second straight show over there that he has gotten the sound-off logo on camera, and I love him for it. So thank you, Fawaz. Thanks also to Magic Spoon for sponsoring yesterday's review. If the idea of a cereal that tastes like the ones you ate as a kid, only healthier, sounds as appealing to you as it did to me, then go to magicspoon.com/Solomonster, use the code Solomonster at checkout, and get yourself $5 off your order. I know some of you have already jumped on this. People genuinely excited about this, because some people didn't even know that this was a thing. Once I found out that it was, I got in touch with them. I said, we got to make this happen. So I'm very happy to have them on as a sponsor. I hope you go support. Goldberg, in his match with Roman Reigns. Goldberg looked fine. He hit a few spears. He tried for a jackhammer, but never actually hit it. I think it's for the best to not have him lifting the biggest star in the company up in the air. He went out in the guillotine. Referee called for the stoppage. And Big Bill now can ride off into the sunset until, of course, they offer him a new contract, which they will. Whenever they have a need for another big name, they will call upon Goldberg. Bianca Belair, I mentioned she won the chamber. Alexa Bliss, this was her first match since Extreme Rules against Charlotte Flair back in September. On Raw last Monday, I love how Alexa just entered herself into the chamber match with about 20 minutes left in the show. This was after they showed her final therapy session on TV. Just like that, poof. Oh, I see there's a spot open. I think I'll take it. They had the graphic already. But it looked like she had finally made real progress in these segments that have been airing now on TV for weeks. When all of a sudden her therapist handed her a new Lily doll. One of those WWE shop Lily dolls. Only this one had the remains of the old Lily doll stuffed inside. And he told her, make sure that you never go anywhere without it. How is that progress? We're right back to where we started with this stuff. When the whole thing started, her carrying around that fucking doll. Except she didn't have the doll with her yesterday. Even though the doctor told her to, she didn't come out with the doll. But she is still dressing and acting like she was the last time we saw her in the ring. So I'm not sure what the point of any of this therapy crap even was. This therapy stuff was pointless. God, I sound like Tony Soprano now. According to PW Insider, at one point this weekend, the disgust finish of the Women's Chamber was a double pin. With Bianca and Alexa, where Bianca would get her shoulder up right at the last second as a way to protect Bliss in her first match back, but they ended up deciding against it. And you know what? I agree. If Bianca is the one going to WrestleMania and challenging for the title, then she should go over decisively. But it was weird to bring Alexa Bliss back just to beat her. You know, I pointed out on the stream yesterday, they did the same thing with Sasha Banks last month. They brought her back on SmackDown on a Friday, and the very next day at the Royal Rumble, she enters at number one. She didn't even last 10 minutes in the Royal Rumble. And they had Zelina Vega dump her out of the ring, or I think knock her off the apron. And that was the end of Sasha Banks. Now, there are a lot of fans very upset about Liv Morgan not winning the Chamber and Alexa Bliss not winning the Chamber. And I'm not going to go on a whole rant like I did in the review yesterday because I was in rare form with that. But look, the reality is, if you've been paying attention to anything that's been going on, then this should not come as a surprise to you. I don't know why people were so upset. Liv Morgan had her program. It ran. It's over. She had several matches with Becky Lynch. She was unsuccessful at every turn. And clearly, she was never the one planned to go to WrestleMania and get some big championship win. It was never in the cards. People allowed themselves to be convinced into, you know, thinking that it was. They just needed somebody in the interim for her to challenge and for her to feud with, you know, that being Becky, until they got to Mania. And now, it's WrestleMania season, and Liv Morgan, she did her best. She did what was expected of her. I thought she, you know, got more television time than she ever has before, but it's over. And for Alexa Bliss, I don't know what they have planned for her, but clearly it is not a Raw Women's Championship match at WrestleMania. The person going to WrestleMania to challenge for the title is the correct person. Drew McIntyre, Madcap Moss, Falls Count Anywhere. Very scary spot. It looks like he's fine. I don't know how they didn't stop the match when it happened. Gave him an Alabama slam. Came down, compressed his neck right down into the mat. But it looks like he's going to be okay. Poor Drew. His last three WrestleManias, he worked Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, and Bobby Lashley. Two of those being for the WWE Championship. And now, most likely, Happy Corbin. Talk about a come down. But that's what it's looking like right now for Drew McIntyre for WrestleMania. Speaking of WrestleMania, The Miz. After his loss on the kickoff show to Rey Mysterio, there was a backstage segment. Him teasing that he's going to go find a partner. He's got a tag team partner in mind. He was going to go make a phone call. And per PW Insider, it looks like it's going to be Logan Paul, who they used at WrestleMania last year with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Well, it looks like they're bringing him back. And you couple this with the rumor of Johnny Knoxville possibly challenging Sami Zayn for the Intercontinental title that Sami won from Shinsuke Nakamura on Friday. Or it aired Friday. Actually happened 2 weeks ago. But they're going heavy on the attractions and the celebrities for WrestleMania this year. Lita, I thought she looked good in her loss to Becky Lynch. If that is her last big match, she went out on a high note. But I think after that performance, as hard up as they are for stars, they're going to be calling upon her in the future for more matches. And then we had the main event, the Men's Elimination Chamber. There was a spot early in the match with Seth Rollins giving Austin Theory a buckle bomb through Bobby Lashley's pod. And that took Lashley out of the match with what they claimed was a possible concussion. He was under concussion protocol. He was not going to be allowed to return to the match. He never got physical. He didn't do anything. He literally went into his pod in the first 2 minutes of the match. He kind of took a bump, but not really. And they sold it like maybe he hit the back of his head on one of the steel beams. And they just had to do something to get him out of the match. We learned after the show why that is. According to a former WWE writer on the Ringer podcast, claimed that Bobby Lashley was already injured coming into the show, and they shot that angle to protect him from doing anything physical to cover for a very real injury, which is not a concussion, but a shoulder injury that he sustained in his Royal Rumble match against Brock Lesnar. And Lashley is going to be visiting with Dr. Jim Andrews this week. He may need shoulder surgery. I mean, look, if you're going to Dr. Andrews, you're going under the knife. So it may not be official yet, but it sure looks like he's going under the knife. He's going to have shoulder surgery. It could keep him out for at least 4 months. That takes him out of WrestleMania this year. So if it's from the Lesnar match, and I commented on this in my Royal Rumble review about the very awkward way that Lashley was landing on a bunch of those German suplexes. He was taking the full brunt of them right on his shoulder. And Lashley is a big guy. He's every bit of 250, 260. And he was just landing over and over and over again on that shoulder. So I'm not surprised that he got hurt. But that means the WWE knew he was hurt for weeks, and they still advertised him anyway for the men's chamber match. And they flew him all the way to Saudi just to shoot that angle. So that guaranteed that we would have a new WWE champion. Lesnar busted out of his pod last and immediately gave Seth Rollins an F5, and he pinned him. F5 to Matt Riddle, eliminated. Suplex and an F5 to AJ Styles, gone. And that left young Austin Theory to die. He was 24 years old. Still had his entire life ahead of him. Brock stalked him. He beat the piss out of him. Theory did get a low blow in on Brock. All that did, though, was make him angry. He tried to escape through the chains on the roof of the chamber. Brock pulled him back inside. He proceeded to deliver the biggest F5 of all time. Off the top of one of the pods, and Theory took a huge bump down onto the outer padding. He was pinned immediately after, and Brock Lesnar is once again the WWE champion. Not a shocking outcome at all, but the way in which Brock buried each and every person in that match, Seth Rollins, AJ Styles, Matt Riddle, Austin Theory, although he's the heel, who should be running scared of someone like Brock Lesnar, all of them made to look like geeks. Every last one of them. And then people wonder why WWE can't make new stars, or why nobody on the roster, even their top names, outside of a very select few, why none of them really feel all that special at all. You know, Lesnar was in studio on Pat McAfee's show the other day. Everybody was talking about it, and I watched the entire thing, and I encourage you to do the same. It was a fantastic interview. It was Brock Lesnar like you've never seen or heard Brock Lesnar before. But there was a part of that interview where Lesnar talked about the younger generation, the current roster, and what they need to do to succeed. He said it's time that some of the younger guys figure out how to get over. And in his words, put fucking asses in seats. Don't worry about your next high spot. Figure out how the hell I can be different. How can I make money? He says they think they need to do the same move over and over, and that's not how it works. It's good guy against bad guy, Tyson against Holyfield. It's telling stories. I don't disagree with a lot of what Brock Lesnar was saying there. I don't think that you can get over to a wide audience by just doing moves and dives. Doing dives does not make you a pro wrestler. Doing dives makes you a gymnast doing a routine. Like a circus performer. And if that's all you have, if the charisma isn't there, if you can't talk, if there's no story, that's fucking boring. And it does plague a lot of wrestling matches today, including in AEW. I still enjoy their show, but there is a sameness to a lot of the matches that we see today, and I think it really sucks. And it's not what wrestling used to be, and I hate that it's turned into that. Everybody has to hit their spots. Everybody has to hit the dives and the topes, and then the next guy does the same thing. That's not what wrestling should be. You need more than that. He's not wrong. But telling people to go get themselves over, go find a way to make money. I don't think WWE is the best place for a talent to do that. You need to have their support. You got to have their blessing. And if you do start to get over on your own without the support of the writers and the executives, it's almost like they resent you for doing it because they didn't come up with it themselves. There have been people who have gotten over or were getting over with the audience. They just weren't getting over with the one person they had to get over with, and that's Vince McMahon. And we've seen examples of this before, whether it was someone like Zack Ryder who had to leave as many years as he spent in that company, 15 years or whatever it was, he had to go leave, and he got himself over all over again on his own. Rusev, with the Rusev Day stuff that they killed off. You know, when your legs are cut off like that, there's only so much you can do. So it's easy for Brock Lesnar to say that, but he doesn't have that problem because he got himself over when he left the company. By the time he came back, and I mean, he was already a WWE champion three times when he left the company the first time, But he went out and became a much bigger star. By the time he came back, he was a made man. And the WWE of 2022 is very different than the WWE of 20 years ago when he first debuted. If that Brock Lesnar was coming up now, I'm not so sure that, you know, he would get over at the same level. He might, because he's a freak athlete, but he didn't have the kind of leverage back then that he does now. So for him, of all people, to say what he said, and then I'm watching him give these men yesterday nothing. He gave them nothing. Just mowing them down with a single F5, one by one. These are top names in the company, former world champions. And they're all treated like geeks. I wonder how Brock Lesnar would have reacted if, let's say, in the back, when everybody was told what the plan was for the main event, let's say Seth Rollins turned around and said, you know what? Yeah, that doesn't really work for me. Here's what I think we should do. Or if AJ Styles was told what the plan was and here's what Brock wants to do, and he goes, well, you know what? That's going to make me look pretty weak. How about we do it this way? Oh, yeah, I'm sure Brock would have been very proud. Right? He would have been very proud of them for standing their ground. But in celebrating Black History Month, in celebration of Black History Month, Brock Lesnar has now taken the WWE Championship from every single African-American star to ever hold the title. He took it from The Rock, he took it from Kofi Kingston, he took it from Big E, and he has taken it back from Bobby Lashley. Brock Lesnar has cemented his place in Black History. And it will now be champion against champion, winner take all for both belts in the main event of WrestleMania 38. Brock Lesnar one-on-one against Roman Reigns. WWE made it official, the whole winner take all thing, after the show on their website. No mention of unification, even though that's exactly what it should be. Only that it is winner take all. So we're going to get Brocky two belts or Roman two belts at the end of WrestleMania this year. And I also don't know where this leaves Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. All of the potential ideas that have been discussed and rumored for him have fallen through. A couple of months ago, it looked a lot like we might be seeing Rollins and Kevin Owens teaming to go after the Raw Tag Team titles. They've gotten away from that. Owens appears to be occupied already. Then I thought, well, maybe they could work him into the Reigns and Lesnar stuff, make it a triple threat. I'm not big on doing triple threats in the main event of WrestleMania, but I think that would have been a great match, and there would have been a reason for him to work himself in there. You know, after the finish of the Royal Rumble match with him and Roman. That's not happening. Not after the way he was booked in that Chamber match, it's not. Any hope of that died yesterday. He was supposed to wrestle Shane McMahon before Shane got sent home. And coming out of the Chamber, before we found out about Lashley's injury, some people saw what they did with the buckle bomb spot and thought, well, maybe they're setting up Bobby Lashley against Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. Obviously, that was never the case, but that was another thought people had. That's not happening. He's already feuded with Edge. I mean, they could always do Rollins and Styles, but I would want to see Edge against AJ Styles. And AJ made it very clear the other day to Ariel Helwani. Well, actually, they did the interview, I think, the day of the Royal Rumble. But they put the interview out on his YouTube channel. But he told Ariel Helwani that that's the match that he wants, too. Who's the one guy you haven't worked with that you... He didn't hesitate for a second. He said, it's Edge. And he says, Edge feels the same way. So I'd love to see that at WrestleMania. But Seth Rollins right now looks like the man without a plan. But there is one other potential opponent that I have in mind for him, which leads perfectly into our top story this week. The top story in a week filled with lots of top stories was the stunning announcement that Cody and Brandi Rhodes, who have been with AEW since its founding, are gone from All Elite Wrestling. Cody, Brandi, Tony Khan all issued statements on Tuesday morning about the news. Cody said, I have loved my time in AEW, amazing locker room, amazing fans, amazing people. The revolution was indeed televised, and I've been incredibly lucky to be part of that. First, I want to thank Tony Khan. He's taken the baton and run with it, and it was an honor to work for him and to know him on a personal level. He is a beautiful soul. Obviously, I need to thank my incredible wife and the mother of my baby girl, Brandy, for all of her love and support throughout this journey together and the amazing relationships that she fostered with Culture City and the American Heart Association. I also need to thank Nick and Matt Jackson. These two, whether they know it or not, took an undesired and not confident little cub and gifted me with the confidence to become a leader of the pack. Kenneth Omega. I love the... That's like Ronda Rousey calling Becky Rebecca on TV a few weeks ago. Kenneth Omega, Chris Jericho, we started the fire. I have so many milestones and beautiful memories of this renaissance through sweat, blood, tears, literal fire, and all of that. I left it all on the mat. Everything pales in comparison to the final contribution I was empowered to lead at the company, the community outreach team. In the most inward moments, your outward behavior and your ability to take fame and influence and do something of value for the communities you visit is the highest honor. I am confident that Amanda Huber will lead the department with style. I'm so proud of my creations and contributions and the items I supported or collaborated on with such wonderful professionals. Tony Khan said Cody and Brandy were integral to the launch of All Elite Wrestling. Cody's ability combined with his boldness and his passion for our industry and his love for community outreach helped AEW deliver on our mission to give fans what they needed for far too long. Something new, innovative, and lasting. And he went on to compliment Brandy as well and said he has immense respect for the both of them. So, a couple of very positive statements, and Brandy put one out as well. Again, all very positive. Justin Barrasso of Sports Illustrated says, one of the key factors that led to Cody's exit was losing all responsibilities involving booking, which really bothered him. You know, booking was an area that Cody's father excelled at, and it sounds like, to me as I read this, it sounds like maybe he was hoping to carve his own niche out in much the same way that Dusty Rhodes did. But if you remember, it was after that infamous segment on the final Dynamite back in 2019, where the Dark Order beat down the Elite guys, which everybody panned. I mean, even Jim Ross works for the company, and he called the show, you know, later on he called it the Drizzling Shits, and said that he was embarrassed by it. After that is when Tony Khan took more control. That's when stories came out about Tony Khan consolidating more power and control over creative in the company. Not that people wouldn't have, you know, input, but he kind of saw that, and he saw the fan reaction. And Tony, you know, whatever you want to say about Tony Khan, you know, a lot of times when there is some kind of negative backlash or fan reaction to something that they do, he does read that, he does see that, and he does try to do something about it. And so that is when he started to exert more control over the creative end of that company. You know, certain top guys do have influence over what they do on TV. Cody was clearly one of those people. I mean, just look at his promos. But evidently, he wasn't satisfied with his lack of power in that area, and that seems to have had as much to do with his decision to leave as the money aspect. Because at the end of the day, I always say this, at the end of the day, it's always about money. You either want more of it, or you find out how much the other guys are making, and you want to be making at least as much as they are, if not more. But money talks. PW Insider says once they hit a snag in the negotiations over money, that ultimately led to the end of their talks on Valentine's Day. And the reason they were even having negotiations is because Cody and Brandy had three-year deals that expired at the end of last year. So after Cody lost his TNT championship to Sammy Guevara in the ladder match on Dynamite, and he said, hand to God, I'm working on a handshake deal with Tony Khan and I have no actual contract right now with the company. He was telling the truth. Negotiations on a new deal were ongoing at that point, which begs the question why Tony Khan would put one of his championships. I know he was an EVP and all and had a certain amount of trust, I'm sure, but still, he put one of his championships on somebody whose contract was literally expiring days later at the end of December. And that he could have rolled over. He could have rolled over Cody's contract if he wanted to, and he chose not to. That was maybe the most shocking thing to me in reading what Meltzer wrote in The Observer, that Cody had the option in his contract, just like the Young Bucks did. Kenny Omega told Meltzer that he did not, So his contract is going to be up next year. But the others did. The option that Tony Khan could have rolled him over with automatically for another 2 years before it expired, he didn't do it. He did it for the Bucks. He may have also rolled over Hangman Page, who's their world champion, so it makes sense. But he opted not to do the same with Cody and Brandy, which I think is very telling that things were not as rosy as they were painted in those public statements that I just read. Not saying that they were lying, I'm just saying that, you know, you read that and everything seems all hunky-dory and things were not as rosy as they painted it out to be. You know, Tony Khan may have sensed that Cody was very unhappy. Wade Keller of The Torch said that Cody was asking for more money than Khan was willing to spend, which would have to be a big money figure considering that Tony Khan has been on a spending spree. He's bringing in free agents left and right for months, with more to come. He's not done yet. They may not all be making millions, but he signed CM Punk. You know that had to be a big money contract, maybe the biggest money contract in the entire company. He signed Bryan Danielson. He signed Adam Cole. He just signed Keith Lee. All of these signings, to a degree, made Cody more expendable when it came to, you know, time to negotiate. Cody was one of the few known names from WWE when this whole thing first started, Jericho being the biggest. And now the company is filled with former names from WWE. You know, what Cody was asking for depends on what he was already being paid. Only Cody knows that. You know, if he was making $1 million, did he want $2 million a year? $3 million? We don't know. But clearly, whatever it was a big ask. And Tony Khan felt that Cody Rhodes was not worth the price tag that he was asking. You know it had to be a lot of money for Tony Khan, of all people, to pause and go, eh, it's a little too rich even for me. You know it had to be a big figure for him to say that. Now, a second season of Rhodes to the Top, which I don't think was ever officially greenlit, but they already had footage filmed for it, that is no more. There will be no more Rhodes to the Top, unless it ends up on Peacock. I don't know how any of this might affect his role as a judge on that Go Big show. You could always just replace him on there. This is a big deal. It's not very often that I read a wrestling news story that shocks me. This shocked me. When I read that Cody and Brandy were gone from AEW, you know, whatever you think of Cody Rhodes, him walking away from the company that he helped build, the company that he was such an integral part of helping to grow, the first ever TNT champion and what that title meant to him, you know, the man who sat next to Tony Khan on headset at the gorilla position, his outside projects with Warner Media, and his unhappiness, his deep unhappiness with how he was used at the end of his WWE run. All of those things taken together and the fact that he was an executive vice president in the company, that he would walk away from all of that and very likely end up back in WWE when he was the EVP out of all of them who could never keep WWE out of his mouth. Always taking little shots, smashing thrones, pulling out golden shovels on TV. It's like, you know, tell me you want to be Triple H and Stephanie without actually telling me you want to be Triple H and Stephanie. That he would be the first of the EVPs to split and go back is one of the most stunning stories in wrestling in a very long time. For someone who reportedly craved more creative influence to possibly end up back at a place that does not prioritize creative influence to anyone. The way WWE operates and the things that Cody did have the freedom to say and the things he had the freedom to do when it came to his character and the way he was presented in AEW, those two things, they just, in my brain, they just don't jive together. This is the man who stood in the middle of the ring on Dynamite 3 years ago before his match against Chris Jericho, and he took a shot at WWE by referring to AEW as Ellis Island, where millions of immigrants arrived with the hope of a better life. He said AEW was Ellis Island for a professional wrestler. This is freedom, he said. Like it's fucking Braveheart. This is freedom. So it seems strange that he would go back to a place that values the opposite. It doesn't seem to make sense. Until you realize two things. First, this is a business. It is a business like any other. And at the end of the day, people want to make money. Now, egos can get involved. And then it's not enough to just make money. Now you want to make more money. You want to make more money than everybody else. I'm not saying that Cody said that to Tony Khan. I'm sensing a common thread in a lot of these reports. I think Cody saw Tony Khan going out and signing all of these big names, bigger than him, and throwing a ton of money at them, and he wanted to be compensated accordingly because he felt like he was worth it as one of the founding fathers of the company. His star was starting to shine brighter. I mean, hell, they put him in the ring with Shaquille O'Neal. Cody put him through a table. He saw how much greener the grass was for some of these other ex-WWE stars, and he wanted to be paid accordingly. But with the crowds turning against him and Brandy and all these other names that Tony Khan brought in, they were no longer the belle of the ball. They were no longer the prom king and queen of AEW. He was still a big name for them, but was he bigger than CM Punk or Bryan Danielson or, you know, Kenny Omega, Jon Moxley? I mean, Jericho is debatable because he's fallen down the card himself. The answer is no. He wasn't bigger than those guys. If he was, Tony Khan would have rolled over that option and stopped him from going back to WWE potentially. So I think that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is something that Kenny Omega talked about on the Observer website. He was on Observer Radio the other day, did this long interview with Meltzer. And out of all of the EVPs, he said that Cody was the one who always seemed most interested in the war with WWE, quote unquote, the war with WWE, and taking it to WWE. Whereas Kenny and the Bucks were not about that. They had a different vision for AEW than the vision that Cody had. And there were some people who thought that he was taking shots at Cody or throwing him under the bus. I didn't see it that way. I thought he was actually being very kind of open and honest, pleasantly so, about the whole thing. But still being very respectful of Cody. I didn't get the sense that, you know, he was harboring any ill will or, you know, backing the bus up over him. But he just said, look, it may have been that we just had different visions for what this thing is supposed to be. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. Cody never seemed to fully let WWE go. It's like deep down, he still had unfinished business there. He wasn't satisfied with how things ended. And now he went out, he made himself a bigger star than he was before. And now he's ready to walk back into Vince McMahon's office looking for his approval. Like, see what I did? I can be a top star in your company. Because it does seem very hypocritical after all the shit-talking that he has done for him to leave the so-called revolution that he helped start, this revolution that he's always talked about, to go back to, you know, what people in AEW would look at and call the evil empire. It does seem hypocritical. Cody and Brandy's contracts expiring means there would be no non-compete. If AEW talents even have non-competes in their contracts, I'm not sure if they do or not. But that would only apply if they were fired or if they were released early. That did not happen. And so it looks like the destination for Cody is indeed going to be WWE. There's been no pen to paper as of yet. That's the belief. But they have had discussions, and it seems very likely that that is where he is headed, to the point where people in WWE are celebrating that they got one. They got one away from AEW, and it's an EVP. Even better. I said where he's headed, notice. I said where he's headed, not they. Because according to Sports Illustrated, it doesn't look like Brandy is coming with him, whether that's her choice or they just don't want her. I don't know. You know, but that's another aspect of this that makes this so surprising to me. Cody had it made in AEW. He could have been a lifer in that company. And he had his wife with him. They just had a baby. They could all travel together on his bus. And now if Brandy doesn't come with him, he's back on the road away from his family like everybody else. I mean, he had to feel really slighted by Tony Khan for it to get to this point. This just feels personal. That he would actually walk away and go back to the place that never viewed him as anything more than a mid-carder. He desperately wanted to drop the Stardust gimmick. Vince McMahon said no, he would not let him. Cody said, I've run this into the ground. I'm done with this. I want to do more. Vince McMahon did not look at him as anything more than a glorified mid-carder. Doesn't matter what his last name was. That is how he was viewed. They did not give a shit about Cody Rhodes. And he's going to drop everything to go back there? It was only a matter of time before the pendulum swung in the other direction and WWE grabbed one of AEW's big names. It could only go one way for so long. This was inevitable. But the fact that it's one of the EVPs, that is a huge coup for Vince McMahon if it happens. Yeah, I mentioned earlier Brock Lesnar on the Pat McAfee show. And I'll bring it up again here. One of the things that Brock talked about was falling out with Vince McMahon in 2004. Going out and doing other things. He ended up in the UFC. He became the UFC champion. He became a legit pay-per-view draw. He became a much bigger star outside of WWE than he ever was in the company. So when he went back, he was a legitimate name. He had the leverage to negotiate the kind of deal that he did, leverage that he never had the first time around. He went out and proved that he could be an attraction somewhere else, and he ended up with a much better deal out of it. That could be part of Cody's thinking here as well. You know, he left WWE with no leverage, doing a shitty mid-card gimmick. He went out, he found success elsewhere, and was a major part of a company that now has 3 hours of television every week on TNT and TBS. He's a bigger name now than he was before. I mean, he's no Brock Lesnar. Cody Rhodes will never be Brock Lesnar. But he is coming back a bigger star than he was when he left. The question is, what kind of leverage does that give him? What kind of deal can he get for himself? Because Cody Rhodes can go back to WWE and he could be featured at the top of the card for the first few months. Could have a nice little honeymoon period. And then, a few months later, he could end up right back in the spot that he was in before, wrestling The Miz and Madcap Moss on television every week. That is the risk that he is taking. You know, there are examples of people leaving or getting fired by WWE and then reinventing themselves and coming back and getting a push. Drew McIntyre is an example of that. But there are lots of other examples of WWE being handed something and fumbling the ball. For every Drew McIntyre, there's three John Morrisons. And you see where he ended up after he came back. Cody has worked in that company before. He knows the risks involved. He is not going to be an executive vice president in WWE. He is not going to have a creative control clause in his contract in WWE. And I think any promoter who gives a creative control clause is stupid and shouldn't be promoting. All that does is cause headaches and problems. So he's not going to get any of that. He's not going to have the freedom that he talked about in that Ellis Island promo. But he is older now. He's got a kid. Your priorities change. Maybe that's a small part of it too. What I know is this. In 6 months from now, Cody Rhodes, let's say he's not happy with his position. He's having buyer's remorse on that new contract. If he signs a contract, again, it's not official. But if he does, he will have nobody to blame but himself. He's the one who went on Talk is Jericho a few years ago before he and the Bucks sold out the Sears Center in Chicago for All In, the show that started it all. He went on Talk is Jericho. He flat out said, "People ask me, would you ever go back to WWE? And I tell them, I don't think so. Not because I don't like WWE or WrestleMania or I don't like money or the big production, but because I am literally now incapable of taking direction. If you told me you're going to write something for me, no. Out of respect for myself, it's my song to go out there and play." I guess he's no longer incapable of taking direction. I'll use this analogy since Cody set himself on fire a few months ago. If you're standing next to a pyromaniac and you're poking the guy in the ribs with a stick, and he turns around and ends up lighting you on fire, don't blame the pyromaniac. You knew what he was capable of, and you're the one who decided to poke him with that stick. You kind of had it coming. I think Cody knows potentially the risks involved in what he is in for. In December, Cody said this about the crowd reactions to him on TV, which were really starting to sour. He said, "I have no complaints. I am thankful to the fans that cheer me, and I am thankful to the fans that boo me, because both sets of fans are getting ready to go on a ride that is just bizarre, and it's not the path that you think. We are not doing what has been done before." When the news first broke, I tweeted out that quote because it was the first thing that I thought of. I didn't know what to make of all of this. I thought maybe it is part of some kind of elaborate work that only he and Tony Khan are in on. Maybe he's trying to be Brian Pillman. But as more details have come out, no, I don't believe it is a work, because I'm still getting that question. Is it a work? Could it be a work? You know, anything's possible. Could it be a work? No, I don't believe it's a work. I believe the negotiations with AEW did not go the way that Cody had thought they would. And frankly, I don't see what's gained if this was a work by him leaving and going back to WWE, even if they do treat him well, and then he eventually goes back to AEW. Who exactly would they be working here? What is the work? Where is the work in that? Is what I'd like to know. It doesn't make sense to me. So no. To all those who still believe this is all for show, I know that quote that I just read would have you think maybe it is. It is a little fishy, but it is not. And it's too bad, because there was still plenty for Cody to do in AEW. They painted themselves into a corner with the stipulation that he can never again wrestle for the AEW world title after he lost to Chris Jericho 3 years ago, and he was adamant about not going back on his word every time he was asked about it. I'm not going to go back on my word. I'm not going to go back on my word. Another reason people think this may be a work, they figure, well, if he leaves and then in a year he comes back, I mean, WWE's not giving him a contract for a year. But, oh, you know, if he eventually comes back, that somehow invalidates the stipulation and he can wrestle for the title again. It's a wrestling storyline. If they wanted to change the stipulation tomorrow, they could have done it. They could do whatever they want. They don't have to let him go and spend the next 3 years of his career working for Vince McMahon to get there. It's just, it's people grasping at straws trying to desperately not be worked by AEW. All these people, they expend so much energy trying not to get worked. So what? If there's some kind of angle and you get worked, whether it's WWE or AEW, and they got you, isn't that what wrestling's all about? In this case, I think it would be a stupid work because it doesn't make any sense. But all these people always expend all of this energy trying so hard not to be worked. It's like, who gives a shit? isn't that part of what wrestling is? Why are you fighting so hard against it? What is the big deal if you get worked? Who gives a shit? But the Cody Rhodes heel turn, we never got the Cody heel turn. I think there could have been a lot of, if he just fully embraced it, I think that could have been fun. Brandy was on television a couple of weeks ago talking like a heel before Dan Lambert came out and absolutely roasted her. You know the audience doesn't like you when Dan Lambert gets cheered against you. For whatever reason, though, he was just so against the idea of going heel. He worked with Jericho, he worked with MJF, Brody Lee, you know, Sammy Guevara, Malachi Black. He burned his flesh off against Andrade. He put Shaquille O'Neal through a table. He did all these things. But there was also matches we never got with Cody against Punk, Danielson, Omega, Moxley, Adam Cole, Hangman Page, Hook. You know, new additions like Keith Lee. So there was plenty for him still to do. All this stuff that's coming out now about him and Brandy, the negative stuff, you know, Wade Keller reported that Brandy was not well liked by a lot of the people backstage, and that caused people like Nyla Rose and Red Velvet and Vicky Guerrero to come to her defense on social media. I don't think it's Wade trying to smear anybody. He spent hours on the phone with people trying to get details on what the hell was going on here. I don't believe he just pulled that out of his ass. Now, is it a vocal minority that just didn't like her and they're spreading lies to try to smear her from within the company on her way out? That's possible. That's wrestling. Welcome to wrestling. Yes, that kind of stuff does happen. But it's also just as possible she rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Both of those things can be true. That there are people there who liked her and that she helped, and there are people who saw a very different side of her and are very happy to see her gone. That's the wrestling business. People will say nice things to your face, and they'll talk shit about you when your back is turned. One thing I will not miss is Brandi on television in those awful segments with Lambert and American Top Team. They only did a few of them, thank God, but that last one they did a couple of weeks ago was absolutely dreadful. It was not entertaining, it was not fun, it didn't seem to serve any purpose other than finding something for Brandi to do. Lambert was already involved with the Lance Archer stuff anyway, so he was already getting TV time. There was no reason for any of it. I'm not going to miss a second of it. But what a hell of a way for Brandi Rhodes to go out of AEW in her final segment, being serenaded by chants of shut the fuck up, and then being called all sorts of horrible things by Dan Lambert. She was out there looking like she was about to cry. But the fact that we won't have to suffer through any more of those segments, that's one positive to all this. Now, with Cody gone, the rest of the roster should look at this, I think, as a chance to step up and take his spot. That's a big spot opening up. His absence opens up a huge opportunity for somebody else. And if I'm Vince McMahon and WWE, I'm pushing Cody to the moon. I'm treating him coming back like I'm rolling out the red carpet for this guy, like the prodigal son is returning home. Even if Vince McMahon still does not see Cody Rhodes that way, I don't think Vince McMahon is sitting around watching fucking Dynamite every week, looking at everything Cody has done since he's left. The first time he lays eyes on him, he'll probably look at him the same way he did 5 years ago. But if I'm Vince McMahon, even if he doesn't believe it, I treat Cody Rhodes like a very big deal. And I tweeted this out just hours after the news broke. I put this up on Twitter. I said, they need to think strategically on this. If Cody goes back to WWE, and he does well, and he's treated right, and he's booked strongly. Yes, I know he's a Rhodes, and I know he was one of the EVPs. They're not going to book a lower card guy the same way. But if Cody goes back and is treated well, it shows the rest of the AEW roster, and people like MJF and Wardlow and their contracts eventually come up. It shows the rest of that roster and all the young free agents that they're going to have. You know what? Maybe we do have a choice as far as where to go when my contract is up. Maybe things wouldn't be so bad if I went to WWE. Maybe the narrative that if I end up there, I'm going to have to change everything about myself and I'm going to be miserable and not be used in the way that I want to be used. Maybe that's not true. And then maybe things start swinging the other way with more people who might be unhappy with their position in AEW giving WWE a look when their contracts come due. I don't even think Vince would care, but it would give them a way to stick it to AEW and throw a little dirt in their eye. WWE's never been above doing that. If Cody goes back and gets buried, or if he goes back and ends up as a bit player on the show, hey, we got this Stardust costume for you waiting over here, pal. That doesn't make them a very desirable option for anybody. Now, what do you do with Cody if he comes in? What do you do? If it's me, I save him as a surprise for WrestleMania. I debut him there in front of that big crowd. He doesn't even need to be in a match. They might want him in one because they have tickets to sell back-to-back nights in Dallas. I would have him working, though, ultimately, in the months ahead. I would have him working with all the top guys. I would have him work with Seth Rollins. I would have him work with Edge and AJ Styles and Randy Orton and play off their history. Orton was the vet. Cody was the student. And now the tables have turned. Cody says, look, I had the balls to do what you never did. I left. You never left WWE because you thought you were safe in the bubble. I left, and I found success, and now I'm back. You know, you could build him for a match with Roman Reigns. I mean, they're paying him all this money if they sign him. It makes no sense to have him wasting time doing anything else. You know, if you sign Cody Rhodes to a big money contract and you put him in the ring with fucking Ricochet, I don't see what that really accomplishes. But on the AEW front, just to get away from this here for a second, there is something else unrelated to keep an eye out for. Discovery's merger with Warner Media just cleared an antitrust review a few weeks ago. And there was a report this week that the current Warner Media CEO, Jason Kilar, is all but gone in the next few months. He's going to be replaced by the CEO for Discovery. It's all but a done deal. Kevin Reilly was the CEO of Warner Media who greenlit AEW Dynamite on TNT and gave them a shot. And it was big news when he left the company 2 years ago. AEW lost a very big supporter in him, and he was replaced by Kilar. Well, now Kilar is about to be replaced himself. AEW is probably fine, but if you're Tony Khan, you hate seeing that kind of turnover or instability because you have a new boss and a new team in place, and you never know for sure how those things are going to play out. You know, there was once a merger with AOL and Time Warner that I won't say killed WCW because WCW killed itself, but it wasn't a good thing. Different circumstances, you know, they owned WCW. Warner was tired of WCW losing money. A little bit different. Here it's a television deal that they have with AEW, but you know they're going to be looking for more money next year when they're negotiating for a new deal. So I'm sure it's something Tony Khan will be paying attention to. It was not a great week for the Dynamite numbers. The show did its lowest audience since the move last month to TBS, down 14% from the week prior, 869,000 viewers. Still third for the night on cable, and the numbers for this show do tend to ping-pong up and down, but it's disappointing to see things drop like that for what I thought was an excellent show, building to the Revolution pay-per-view. The Revolution card is looking stacked. Hangman Page against Adam Cole for the AEW World title is now official. Britt Baker defending the AEW Women's title against Thunder Rosa, now official. Somebody asked me on the stream yesterday about this. Does it feel like this thing really hasn't kicked into full gear yet? I agree. And there's still a few weeks to go, a couple of weeks, I guess not that long, until Revolution. Yeah, this thing really, it doesn't feel as hot as it should feel at this point, which has me thinking maybe you don't do the title change at Revolution. Maybe you can, you know, kind of drag this out until Double or Nothing and do a title change there. It just doesn't feel like it should be at that, you know, it's at the level that it should be at this point. I agree with that. CM Punk will face MJF in a dog collar match. Jon Moxley will probably be wrestling Bryan Danielson. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus are going to defend their AEW tag team titles in a three-way match against the winners of two tag team battle royals they're doing on TV, which I think is overkill. All you need is one. You don't need two. You know, I said it the other night. The last two teams represented in that one battle royal. You take those two, and those are the two that go to Revolution. You don't need to do two separate battle royals. The ladder match for a future AEW TNT title match. Keith Lee is in, Wardlow is in, and now Powerhouse Hobbs, who beat Dante Martin on Rampage Friday. He's it. So they got some beef. They got some beef in that ladder match so far. And they're doing Sammy Guevara against Andrade El Idolo on Rampage this Friday for the TNT title after Andrade cost Darby Allin his title match against Sammy on Wednesday. I assume that the match is still happening. Sammy apparently suffered a scratched cornea in the match with Darby. I think he should be able to wrestle with that. Maybe he'll have to wear an eye patch, like Julia Hart's been wearing an eye patch. And Pac, and all these people that have been misted by Malakai Black. So, if it doesn't prevent him from working, then it will be Sammy Guevara defending the title against Andrade. I think Darby's going to return the favor, get involved. Hopefully we get a triple threat at Revolution for the title. But that's a hell of a lineup. But you know what happens when the ratings for Dynamite drop, right? You know what happens when that occurs. Tony Khan starts making promises. And Tony Khan starts promising something very big. And that is exactly what he did on Busted Open Radio on Friday. He promised a lot of news this week. He said he's working on something pretty big that, in his words, will be massive. He said it would be a big deal in pro wrestling. He gave no hint about what it might be. Meltzer did say that Khan was in meetings all day on Friday trying to put it together, whatever it is. It doesn't look like it's a talent acquisition. It's some kind of business deal, maybe. again, you know, he's got to be careful when he starts throwing words like that, like massive. You know, he tends to throw words like that around and it really gets people's hopes up. But he's promising another big announcement. You know, at some point, you run out of big announcements. You know, it's been a busy week when we are an hour into this show and I am only first talking about Stone Cold Steve Austin possibly coming out of retirement to wrestle one more match at WrestleMania. At least one more match. There's rumors it could be more than just one. This is one of those things where I will believe it when I see it. This one, if it happens, would really surprise me. The last time Stone Cold Steve Austin wrestled a match, the United States started its invasion of Iraq. That's how far back it goes. Samoa Joe had just started his long reign as the Ring of Honor World Champion when The Rock pinned Steve Austin at Safeco Field in Seattle in what was never announced as Austin's retirement match. He didn't want anybody knowing that it was going to be his last match. Maybe deep down, he didn't know for sure if it would be his last. We all know how these wrestling retirements go. No wrestler ever really retires until they're dead. Right? Mick Foley retired, then came back. Shawn Michaels retired for, you know, a long time. He was retired for 8 years. Well, first he was retired for 4, and then he came back. But then ultimately he retired, stayed away for 8 years, and then came back in Saudi Arabia and was part of one of the worst matches of his career. I thought Bret Hart would never be able to wrestle again. And even he came back and worked a few matches in WWE. He even won the United States Championship. But Austin has stayed away for almost 20 years. One of the biggest names in the history of the business. Plenty of opportunities to come back and make a fortune. And he has stayed away. Austin is 57 years old. With bad knees and a bad neck. Keeps himself in great shape. His arms are huge. But he hasn't worked a match in 19 years. Him doing the honors, finally, for The Rock at WrestleMania felt like the right way to go out. The final chapter of their WrestleMania trilogy. And really, if there was ever a time for him to come back, and WWE, they kind of screwed him a little bit. If you remember back in 2005, he had only been out for a couple of years by that point. But in 2005, they did that Raw Homecoming show and they went back to USA Network. And remember the promo in the ring with Hulk Hogan and Mean Gene Okerlund? Austin was on that show. He had already left the building, I think, at that point. That's where he stunned all the different members of the McMahon family. Well, later on, Hogan came out and he just blatantly teased the possibility that he was going to step into the ring with Stone Cold. And what a huge match that would have been. Austin wasn't aware of this and had no intention of coming back, so he wasn't very happy about that. But even as far back as then, you know, they were teasing that as a big match. To me, though, if ever there was a time for him to come back, it was for a match with CM Punk at WrestleMania after they did that interview together promoting one of the 2K video games. It might have been 2K13 or WWE, whatever it was called, if it was called 2K13 at that point. That segment was one giant tease for a match that was never going to happen. And it's a shame it didn't, because it would have been huge. And that's when I realized Austin does not want to come back. He's smart. He would be asked about it and he would tease it. He would leave the door open and he would make comments like, well, I think I have 2 years left in me for a solid run if I ever wanted to come back. Right? He would always leave the door open because it's smart business. Keep people wanting it. Keep the possibility open. Right? It's like Jim Carrey in that movie. So you're saying there's a chance, right? He would always keep the door open. But in recent years, he seemed to slam it shut. It would come up and he would say, I had my time. I'm done. I'm not coming back. He was a little more decisive about it. And I didn't think anything of it. I said, well, the guy stayed away for almost 20 years. Of course he's done. I have a lot of respect for him staying away. He could have come back. And he said, I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm done. I'm finished. I mean, think of the millions of dollars this guy has left on the table over the years just in WrestleMania matches that he could have had. Now, all of a sudden, Kevin Owens, the man who adopted the stunner as his finish, is on Monday Night Raw berating the state of Texas. This is the premise for a potential Steve Austin comeback match after all these years. Kevin Owens is saying mean things about Texas. Now, I know there's some rumor going around of Austin against Goldberg. It's bullshit. Don't believe it. I believe that stemmed from a discussion on another podcast about potential opponents for Austin if he ever had a comeback run. It was not a statement of anything WWE actually has planned. But people heard that. They said, oh, Austin against Goldberg is being planned. No, it's not. Goldberg, for now, is done. And even if Goldberg was going to come back and do another match, Goldberg against Austin is a terrible idea. Absolutely horrendous idea. Would have been cool 20 years ago, 25 years ago. Who knows, maybe even 10 years ago. Goldberg against Austin, first coming back now. Terrible idea. But again, it's bullshit. It's not planned. It's not going to happen. But this is a company that is desperate for star power because they have a giant stadium to fill on back-to-back nights in Dallas. They've got around 47,000 tickets out so far for night one, about 53,000 for night two, which is actually, it's not bad, but they want more. They have more seats to fill. And evidently, they feel as confident as they ever have at any other point in the last 19 years that they just might be able to pull off the impossible and convince Steve Austin to return to the ring for an actual match. This is the closest that we have ever come to it becoming a reality. Austin has always said he did not want to come back less than. That's what was holding him back from coming back. I don't want to come back if I can't be the Stone Cold of old. And remember, a few years ago, he tore his rotator cuff. He was training too hard before the last WrestleMania in Dallas, where he and Shawn Michaels and Mick Foley, they beat up the League of Nations, the League of Losers. And he had to have surgery after the show. He said his bicep was also barely hanging on by a thread. And that was just from a training injury, training for that one segment. It wasn't even a match. But he's always said that. I don't want to come back less than. I don't want, you know, people to look at me and say, oh, it's what The Undertaker said. In The Last Ride, when he did his whole documentary series, he made similar comments. He said, I don't want to be that guy who gets to an age where the father looks at his son and says, son, you should have seen this guy in his prime when he was good. And the sad part about that is The Undertaker did hold on too long. I don't know if he honestly believes that he never got to that point and he called it quits right at the right moment. The Undertaker was already there. There were already a lot of people pointing at The Undertaker going, man, I used to remember when that guy was pretty good. He became what he did not want to become. Austin does not want that. He's made that very clear. But as a fan of the old Stone Cold, I would hate to see him come back and be less than what he was. But I will be damned if I wouldn't mark out like a teenager to hear the glass shatter one more time and see 50,000 people in Texas, no less, 50,000 people erupt as Stone Cold Steve Austin storms down to the ring wearing that BMF vest again. When that glass shatters, it just takes me back. And no, you know, Kevin Owens is not the opponent that I would have wanted to see Austin step into the ring with for one last match. It should have been Punk. That ship has sailed. It should have been Punk or John Cena or Brock Lesnar. But there is a history between Austin and Owens from when Owens picked his brain for advice when he was a kid, first starting out in the business. He asked permission, you know, later on to use the man's finishing maneuver as his own, and Austin gave him his blessing. And I know that Owens would be a great opponent for him as far as protecting him and bumping around for him and, you know, squaring up with him on the microphone. I think we could get some incredible promo work from those two, even though they would be infected by those awful what chants. I don't think there's any way to avoid that. And if Austin is thinking about coming back for more than just one match, then Owens as his first opponent is fine. You know, I get it. He's probably looking around and seeing all of these guys, whether it's Edge or Goldberg, Punk in AEW, all of these guys, some of them, you know, people who were his contemporaries 20 years ago, people that he worked with, making huge gobs of money with these comebacks. And maybe he figures, finally, well, why not me too? I'm still keeping myself in pretty good shape. He's got a ring. I think he got a ring from High Spots last year. I think they gifted him a wrestling ring. So he actually has a wrestling ring in his, wherever it is, garage or whatever, that he could train in if he wanted to. And maybe he just looks at the landscape and says, you know, if not now, then when? I'm not getting any younger. I said it earlier with the Cody Rhodes stuff. Money talks. Maybe he was ignoring the sounds of it for years, but eventually the voices get louder and louder and louder, and money talks. But it would still surprise me, because he has just been so adamant about saying no for 19 years. But this is what happens when WWE is desperate for attractions, and they have done a piss-poor job of creating new stars like Austin. I mean, look at what this year's WrestleMania is built around so far. Another Brock Lesnar main event. The return of Ronda Rousey. 57-year-old Steve Austin possibly returning to the ring. Logan Paul. Johnny Knoxville. And people are going to say, oh, well, Sting. What about Sting in AEW? Sting is 62 and he wrestles. Sting never left. Sting never went away. That's what makes it so impressive. Sting has been wrestling this entire time. Either, you know, WCW went under. Within a few years, he was in TNA. TNA, WWE, now in AEW. Sting never retired. He was just smart enough to take the money that they were throwing at him and say, all right, I think I'll stick around for a little while longer. I wear the face paint, right? I can hide my age. I still look pretty good. But that's what the top of the card is looking like. I haven't even mentioned, you know, some of the other rumors going around as far as attractions and celebrities and stuff. Well, I guess I did. I mentioned Johnny Knoxville, but you look at the card, you look at the plans that they have for this show. It's sad. Yes, I know it's WrestleMania. They always try to have some kind of attraction, but like you look up and down the card. This is what the entire show is being built around. This is what they have to rely upon to sell tickets. But until it's official, and I actually see an angle on television, I see Austin back on television doing stuff, I think it's far more likely he'll end up doing a segment where he takes it. Maybe he takes a few bumps and he gives Owens the stunner, drinks some beers, right? It doesn't even have to be a formal match. Austin was always going to be at WrestleMania this year. He was in the earliest commercials for the show. It's Texas. It's WrestleMania. Of course, Stone Cold is going to be there in some capacity. But until they shoot the angle on television to make it an actual match, I am very much wait and see on this. I still cannot believe this is actually going to end up happening. If it does, it's Stone Cold Steve Austin. 16-year-old Solomon Monster is going to be watching with a smile. But I would be very surprised. And then there's the report from Dave Meltzer that WWE is planning another, quote, Austin-level surprise for WrestleMania this year. Now, there aren't that many people at Austin's level, but The Rock got people talking with a tweet to somebody who complimented him on his appearance at the Super Bowl last weekend when he mentioned, you know, in his promo, he basically cut a wrestling promo at the Super Bowl, and he mentioned the millions. And he said in the tweet, he said, brother, that was a little Easter egg for you and the millions. Don't worry. The millions with a pause, which he did not do at the Super Bowl. He said the millions with a pause is coming soon. That has people thinking that maybe The Rock is going to make a surprise appearance in Dallas. If he does, I think it's to confront Roman Reigns at the end of the show to tease a match between the two at next year's WrestleMania in Hollywood. I mean, we've been hearing about this for months. That's the match that they wanted in the worst possible way. They want The Rock back in for a match against Roman Reigns. Especially if Roman beats Lesnar. I don't think they would want to end back-to-back WrestleManias with heel Roman Reigns standing tall. That's why you send The Rock out there for the stare down and the big reaction to close out the show. It's a risk. Rock's schedule has stopped them from doing a lot of things with him in the past, including some WrestleMania matches they wanted him for. If they announce something a year in advance any number of things could happen between now and then, so I think it would be a risk. But I don't know what else it could be. You know, John Cena just announced this. He was just announced this week for a live-action Looney Tunes movie that's going to begin production in late March, based around Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. That would seem to rule him out of WrestleMania this year, although the story said production begins in late March, not necessarily filming. But New Mexico is not that far from Texas. So I guess anything's possible if you wanted to make some kind of a surprise cameo. By the way, GQ magazine dropped a video interview with John Cena talking about what they referred to as his most iconic characters, including his roles in Fast 9, The Suicide Squad, The Marine, and Bumblebee. Would any of those really be considered iconic? I mean, Peacemaker has been pretty well received. I don't know about those other ones. I think that's a stretch. I don't know about iconic. But they also talked about WWE. And people will look back on his character in WWE as an icon. You can deny it now, but 20 years from now, the younger fans will be talking about John Cena, the icon. But he talked about never being turned heel after his big babyface run and how there are 10 years worth... He believes there are 10 years worth of storylines if they ever pulled the trigger on a heel turn. He said, would it have been great to be able to mess with the flaws of WWE John Cena? Oh my goodness, I think there's another 10 years worth of story in there, but it's not my choice. I don't run the company. Cena would have loved it. You know he would have embraced that shit. He would have embraced that heel turn. He almost turned heel in 2012 after his loss to The Rock at WrestleMania. He even had new music made, new gear. And then Vince McMahon got cold feet and he told everybody, I don't want to hear this mentioned again. He pulled the plug on the whole idea. Maybe he still had horrible flashbacks to turning Steve Austin heel at WrestleMania. But it's too bad we never got heel Cena after the babyface run was over. You know, a true heel, I know he was being booed a lot, but a true heel John Cena against CM Punk feud back in like 2011 into 2012... That would have been fantastic. The timing, though, I mean, they had already announced the Rock match for WrestleMania in Miami. So, you know, time-wise, it just wasn't going to work out. It is official. The Undertaker will be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame this year. Boy, they're just letting anybody in there now, aren't they? He'll be inducted at the American Airlines Center in Dallas the Friday before WrestleMania in a ceremony to be held immediately following SmackDown in the same building that night. They're selling 2-for-1 tickets to the show. Come for SmackDown, stay for the Hall of Fame. If ever there was a no-brainer for their Hall of Fame, it's The Undertaker. Nobody has had the career longevity in that company that Mark Calloway had as The Undertaker, and he was a top star from day one. A year into his career there, he pinned Hulk Hogan to win his first WWF championship. There have been a few people that have stormed, you know, onto the scene and won the world title that quickly. You know, Yokozuna did it. He was in the main event of WrestleMania 9 only a few months after debuting. Brock Lesnar did it a few months after his debut. He beat The Rock. But beating Hogan, even if only for a few days before he lost it back, that was a big deal. And after that, I mean, he worked with every top star across multiple eras in that company. He worked with Hogan, Savage, Warrior, Jake Roberts in the Golden Era, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Diesel, Yokozuna, Psycho Sid, Mankind, Vader in the New Generation era, Stone Cold, The Rock, Triple H, Kane, Kurt Angle in the Attitude Era, you know, a young Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Randy Orton in the Ruthless Aggression era. The list goes on. I could be here all day. Batista, Edge, CM Punk, Jeff Hardy, AJ Styles. It's incredible to look back on that period of time and all of the different names. You know, some of them probably weren't even born. Or they were just barely born when he was first wrestling all those other top names I mentioned first. And he worked with them all. He had more classic matches in the latter half of his career than he did the first half. The first half was him establishing the character. It's more about character work and choking people and rolling his eyes in the back of his head. You know, he didn't have to be in there, you know, working wrestling holds. That's not what the Undertaker character was. The second half was him saying, hey, I can work my ass off too. you know, the iconic entrance, the legendary entrance music of Jim Johnston with a little splash of Kid Rock thrown in there. That video package was tremendous, by the way. It's the longest fucking video package I've ever seen for any one person in my entire life. But the video package, the Hall of Fame package they put together for The Undertaker was incredible. They were airing it on TV this week. But I mean, you look at his body of work, and you know, two of the greatest matches I've ever seen in my life. I mean, we could talk about the streak, obviously, the WrestleMania streak and what a selling point that became each year. But two of the greatest matches I've ever seen in my life, and two of the very best matches in WWE history. Both against Shawn Michaels. The first Hell in a Cell match at Bad Blood, and their match at WrestleMania 25. And 26 was good too, but 25 was the better of the two. 25, to me, is still the greatest WrestleMania match of all time. The Hell in a Cell match with Mankind is in the category, I mean, that's in a category all by itself. And when I rank the Undertaker's greatest rivals, which I have done on this very podcast before, for my money, his top five rivals from number five all the way up to number one, if I had to rank them, are Triple H. He's at the bottom of the top five. Brock Lesnar, I'd have him at number four. I have Kane at number three. Shawn Michaels in number two, and I put Mankind in that top spot. I've always maintained that Mankind is The Undertaker's greatest rival. He was the first man to be booked like a legitimate threat, to where he debuted in the company, and then he beat The Undertaker in back-to-back pay-per-view matches. And then years later, they come back, they have that Hell in a Cell match that is still talked about to this day, over 20 years later. I mean, the highlights, Jim Ross's commentary, everything about it is still replayed and talked about it to this very day. It's one of those things I will always remember where I was when I was watching that match. If ever there was someone who deserved a solo induction into the Hall of Fame, like David Ortiz being the only player elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame this year, it would be The Undertaker. I don't think they're going to do it. There's been no indication of that. But whether they do it or not, on the question of who should be the one to induct him, I don't think it should be any one person. I think it should be a trio of people. I think his top three greatest rivals should each have a few minutes to say a few words about him before they introduce him. I think Mick Foley, Shawn Michaels, and Kane. They should all induct Undertaker into the Hall of Fame. That's how I would do it. And if Vince McMahon didn't sound like someone had poured molten lava down his throat, I would say that he would be a fine choice too, but it's hard to understand what he's saying anymore. I think he would be a terrible choice for any kind of a long speech. But at least he'll have his moment this time in front of actual living, breathing human beings and not just a video wall and a pallbearer hologram like his send-off, which I actually thought that was cool, but him retiring and the whole segment they did at Survivor Series in the Thunderdome, you know, it was disappointing. You want to do something like that ideally in front of an actual live audience, and now they'll have a chance to send him out there in an actual arena setting, and he'll get the send-off that he should have gotten at Survivor Series. Undertaker isn't the only man going into the Hall of Fame this year. Samoa Joe was the latest inductee named to the first class of the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame. Someone who I said had to be part of the first class. This was a no-brainer. He is the greatest Ring of Honor world champion of all time. He put that title and that company on the map. Joe joins Bryan Danielson and the Briscoes so far in the inaugural class. He's not only the best, but he is the longest reigning ROH world champion in history. Lots of classic matches with CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, of course, the match with Kenta Kobashi in 2005, which might just be the greatest match in Ring of Honor history. Joe is one of the names most synonymous with the early success of that promotion, and it would have felt very empty, I think, without him in there in this first class. And the final member of this class is going to be announced tomorrow, and then a special Hall of Fame episode of their television show, which I assume will be match highlights of all the inductees, is going to air the weekend of March 5th. When it comes to men's grooming, I got an announcement for all of you guys. You've heard me mention Hawthorne here on the podcast before. I use their products. I love their products. I love their cologne. I've got about 3.5 ounces worth of it sitting on my vanity right now. But you know who else uses Hawthorne? Some of your favorite athletes. Steph Curry says he can't live without their body wash. Zach LaVine of the Chicago Bulls used Hawthorne's online quiz to tailor his perfect cologne. Tyrod Taylor of the Houston Texans wanted a brand that works as hard as he does on and off the field. And he found that brand in Hawthorne. So what is it? If you don't know by now, Hawthorne is a premium men's grooming brand that uses data from hundreds of thousands of customers to recommend perfect products for your body chemistry, your skin type, your hair type, your lifestyle. These products are going to give you the confidence that you need each and every day to look and feel and smell your best. That means your body wash, your shampoo, your deodorant. It's time to upgrade all of it. First, you take their quiz, which is really thorough with the types of things they ask about you. They ask me about stuff like what my skin type is on my face, what my hair type was, what cologne do I wear, what my drink of choice is. You may not think that that kind of thing matters, but it does. When they're trying to find out, you know, matters most to me, all of those things matter. Didn't take more than a couple of minutes to answer all of their questions. Very easy. I ended up with their essentials bundle with all the products tailored to my body type and my lifestyle, like their gentle and mild face lotion. I am but a gentle and mild man. There's a cooling shampoo for my scalp. My favorite, though, so far, by far my favorite, is the cologne set. It comes with two different colognes, one for work, one for play. I've gotten some compliments about it as well. You really don't need too much of it, but I probably use more than I need to. I just like the scent. And how's this for customer service? Hawthorne stands by its customers, so if you're not completely satisfied for any reason, they'll retailer your products for free based on your feedback, and they'll pay for the shipping. What company does that? There's literally no risk involved. Looking and feeling your best has never been easier. So get ready for whatever comes your way this season by taking Hawthorne's quiz today. Go to hawthorne.co and use promo code SOLOMONSTER to get 10% off your first purchase. That's Hawthorne. .co, promo code SOLOMONSTER. Hawthorne.co, promo code SOLOMONSTER. There was a report this past week about Vince McMahon being happy with the current WWE creative situation and how he feels that there's nothing to fix. And it really wasn't a report so much as it was a Q&A on the PW Insider website where Mike Johnson, he'll answer questions from readers, not unlike what I do sometimes in the mailbag segment here on the show. And he was answering a question one reader had about why the WWE product feels so stale. And he pointed out that outside of a handful of names like Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, a lot of the talent is given terrible dialogue to recite, and they're not presented in the best way possible. And boy, did we see some of that at the end of that Elimination Chamber pay-per-view just yesterday. Johnson said the WWE doesn't fix its problems because Vince McMahon probably doesn't see them as problems at all. In his mind, he doesn't believe that there's anything wrong with the way WWE operates. They made $1 billion last year for the first time, so it's easy for him to shrug off any criticism of the product because they're making so much money. And Johnson said that he's been told that Vince McMahon pushes and presents what he likes and what he wants, and nothing else matters. That's why the shows are presented the way that they are, and nothing is going to change anytime soon, if ever, so long as Vince McMahon is the one running the show. Now, there's nothing groundbreaking in what he said there, nor was he trying to come off like he's actually spoken to Vince McMahon directly and he knows what's in the man's head. Nobody does. Vince McMahon's head is a very scary place. You know, I'm watching The Wire right now for the first time, and if you saw it, you remember Hamsterdam, right? Where the lieutenant comes up with this plan to herd all of the drug dealers to this one street where there's nothing but vacant houses and he lets them do whatever they want down there. No fear of getting arrested or prosecuted or anything like that. They can sell all the drugs they want so long as they stay off the usual corners in the rest of the neighborhood. So that his numbers look better to all of his bosses, right? That place was hell on earth. You've got drug deals going down, people getting shot. I would rather move into one of those vacant houses in Amsterdam than live inside the head of Vince McMahon. This isn't any new ground being broken here. How many times have I said this on the podcast? They have no incentive to change the way they do things. They're making money in spite of themselves. They've got guaranteed money coming in out of every orifice. They got money coming in from Fox. They got money coming in from NBC. They got the Crown Prince sending them money. The Vince McMahon of 1996 or 1997 would have made a change creatively, because if they didn't, they wouldn't have survived. They would have gone belly up. For their own survival, they had to change. When your back is against the wall, you do what needs to be done. And then I see Brian Gewirtz, who was the head writer for Monday Night Raw for years. He laughed at the headline on one of these wrestling news websites where it said, you know, Vince McMahon doesn't see anything wrong with the WWE product. And just the way, I guess, the headline was worded. And he laughed. And he put out a tweet. And he said, as a member of the creative team for so long, he says, the number of creative meetings that he's been in with Vince McMahon, over 1,000. The number of times that he has said, everything looks perfect, I literally have nothing to add, and I'm completely satisfied. Now, who wants a hug? Zero. Now, I get that he's trying to be cute and all, but both of those things can be true. We hear stories all the time about Vince McMahon ripping up scripts for shows a few hours before they go live, just so he can rewrite the show himself the way that he wants it. The man is never satisfied. I'm not sure why he even has writers. Other than to just cherry pick an idea here and there that he likes. Otherwise, he rewrites it the way that he wants to anyway. I'm sure in his mind, he reads what they write sometimes and says, damn it, this sucks. We've got to make it better. The point is, his idea of better is not always better at all. A lot of times it's worse. But he thinks it's good. Nobody is saying the man is always completely satisfied, and yeah, he's being very disingenuous when he tweets something like that. What he's saying and what Mike Johnson was saying can both be true. I've used the showrunner analogy before. I can't think of another weekly television show that's been on the air for as long as WWE has that has had the same showrunner the entire time. You know, television shows bring in new blood all the time. Usually when ratings go down, they try to breathe new life creatively into a show. If that doesn't work, the show gets canceled. I can't think of another, you know, episodic show like this that has had the same showrunner for 30 plus years. The man became eligible for Medicare over 10 years ago. There's plenty of 70 and 80 year old CEOs out there who run the day-to-day operations of their business and are still very involved. But none of them also lead creative in the way that this man does. To him, it's still fun. That's what he told Steve Austin on his podcast a few years ago. It's still fun for him. I'm glad he's still having fun, because a lot of people are not. Not like they used to. They want to, but not like they used to. They do. They really do. They want to enjoy the shows, but it's not as fun for them as it is for him. But he doesn't see anything wrong with that. And I thought that was very telling. Again, we're not breaking a whole lot in the way of new ground here, but it kind of took on a life of its own and became a big news story. But what Mike Johnson is saying is absolutely 100% true. And it's not anything that you haven't heard me and probably other people talk about before. The incentive for them to make changes is simply not there. Some other news and notes. Former WWE star Kairi Sane is back with the Stardom promotion in Japan, which she called home for many years, from 2012 to 2017, before coming to the U.S. They hosted a press conference to announce her return. She is now simply going by the name Kairi, in all caps, like Walter. She'll be making her return at their World Climax shows on March 26th and 27th at Sumo Hall. Her WWE contract expired this month. It's been a while since we've seen her. She returned to Japan in July of 2020 and was still working for the company as an ambassador. She had asked WWE for permission to appear on a Stardom show early last year, and WWE said no. They denied her request. Well, she doesn't have to ask for permission no more. In WWE, she held the NXT Women's Championship, the WWE Women's Tag Team titles with Asuka. She won the Mae Young Classic. So she did some stuff there. And I believe WWE did make her an offer to get her back, and she said no. She turned them down. She didn't want to live in the United States and have to travel back and forth in the age of COVID. Still a lot of restrictions when it comes to travel, you know, back and forth, in and out of Japan. I believe... that when you enter Japan, I think you still have to quarantine for a certain period of time. I could be wrong. They could have changed that, but she just didn't want to put up with it. I mean, who can blame her? She's still, I still say she has the best elbow drop that I have seen since Randy Savage. According to a report from Fightful, AEW has its eye on yet another former WWE talent in Buddy Matthews, the former Buddy Murphy. They were told that several talents in the company were of the impression that there is a working plan to bring him in. I think we all know what that is. I mean, if you saw Dynamite on Wednesday, it seems pretty clear to me this new member of the House of Black that's being teased is very likely going to be Buddy Matthews, which I think is great. He was released in June of last year, and he has worked at a lot of places since then. We even had him in to work Malakai Black at House of Glory a few months ago, and they tore it up. He wrestled Okada at New Japan's Battle in the Valley show in November. He's worked for MLW. He worked this year's Bola tournament in PWG. He's not going to come in and be a game changer or anything like that. You know, he's a hell of a worker. His shit in the ring looks good. You look at where Malakai Black is right now, where Andrade is. It's hit or miss, you know, whether he can end up in a better position than they're currently in. But I think he'd be a solid pickup for AEW. Now, I could see him as a TNT champion level guy there at some point, like Miro was. After 5 years and nearly 270 episodes, 205 Live has been pronounced dead by WWE. It was already on life support. They finally pulled the plug. In its place is a brand new show called Level Up. NXT Level Up, in the same time slot on Friday nights after SmackDown. The first episode of which was taped before the Vengeance Day show on Tuesday. It's basically 205 Live under a new name with a focus on the lesser known names coming out of the PC. 205 Live was rendered useless a long time ago, you know, but when they did away with the 205 weight limit for the title, and then they did away with the title itself, and they unified it with the North American Championship, the show didn't have a purpose. At least not under that name. I'm surprised it lasted this long. Ric Flair. This is becoming a recurring theme here, but Ric Flair was back in the news again for something that he said on his Woo Nation podcast. And this one stuck in my craw. This guy's going to make me stick up for WWE. Now look what you've done. You're making me do this. On his podcast, Flair revealed that he was very upset. Because Flair's a very emotional guy. If you look at him wrong, he starts crying. So we already know he's a very emotionally sensitive person. He revealed that he was very upset that no one from WWE reached out to him after he announced his split from Wendy Barlow. He said what killed him is that so many people reached out to him, Charles Barkley, Darius Rucker, Kid Rock, but not one person from WWE checked in to see how he was doing after the news broke, or to find out what happened and make sure he was doing okay. Probably because he's already been through this about five times before. But nobody reached out to him. He was very upset, and he referred to WWE as the most insensitive company in the world. People that I have given my life to, and they've also given a lot of theirs to me, but no one. You see where it goes when you're not there. They simply do not care at all anymore. Now, I'm not saying he's wrong when he calls WWE an insensitive company. You see the way they treat people sometimes, and I can understand him being a little bit bothered by it. But to say, oh, nobody called or texted from WWE to see if I was okay after the split from my lady. WWE is the most insensitive company in the world. This is coming from a man who borrowed money numerous times from Vince McMahon, his boss, on one occasion to the tune of $800,000 that Vince McMahon gave him because he needed to pay off his debt to the IRS because this man was incapable of paying his taxes. Through some of his divorces, Vince gave him money, and there have been many. He's gone on record as saying that Vince would lend him money. You know, before the casket was closed, at his son's funeral, he slipped his Hall of Fame ring onto Reed's finger. Fast forward a few months, he's down at NXT. Triple H calls him aside, and he gives him another Hall of Fame ring with his son's name engraved on it. How very insensitive of them. So hearing him of all people, and he's got plenty of reasons to defend WWE, including a couple of the examples I just gave you. For him to go public on his podcast and be complaining about the fact, oh, they didn't call me, they're so insensitive. The most insensitive company in the world. It just, hearing him say this, him of all people, it just rubbed me the wrong way. The minute they offer, and you know, the minute they offer him another contract that pays well, I guess they won't be so insensitive anymore. Flair is also getting the Tupac treatment and getting his own hologram. Imagine AR describes itself as an augmented reality metaverse company that creates immersive AR campaigns for sports teams, brands, and businesses. And through the website FameDays.com, fans will be able to download and use the FameDays app to view life-size hologram video messages right inside their home. It works in a way that fans can record their videos alongside a virtual projection of, in this case, Ric Flair, as if they are with him in real life. And the service officially launches in April with a retail price of anywhere from $5 to $20 per greeting. Hey, you know, if they really want to make it lifelike, the hologram will be sitting at the bar double-fisting with a drink in each hand doing the helicopter. I was sad to hear about the death of former WWE and WCW referee Mickey Henson. He passed away this week at the age of 60 following a battle with COVID-related pneumonia. He had suffered severe lung damage from it. He was taken off life support. If you grew up a WWE fan in the early 90s, you may have seen him as one of the talents they brought in to do jobs to the big stars. I honestly did not even know that he had done jobs for WWE in the early 90s. There's one right there on YouTube of him against The Undertaker. I knew of him as a referee. I didn't know that he was brought in to do that. More likely, you would recognize him as one of the referees. Years later in WCW, after WWE bought the company, he was hired as a referee a few years later in 2005. And he worked across all of the brands, Raw, SmackDown, ECW. But for a time, he was the head referee for SmackDown and ECW. He officiated a ton of classic matches. I mean, he was in the ring for some very memorable battles, including Goldberg's title defense against DDP at Halloween Havoc in 98, which I still think probably was Goldberg's best match of his entire career. The Starrcade main event, where Nash ended Goldberg's undefeated streak. The Bret Hart-Chris Benoit tribute match on Nitro, the tribute match to Owen Hart in 1999, which he has said was his personal favorite match that he was ever a part of. He reffed the hardcore match between Edge and Mick Foley at WrestleMania 22. So he's been, and that's just a small sampling. He's been part of a lot of classic bouts. He was diagnosed with lymphoma in 2008, and WWE kept him on the payroll for 8 months before letting him go, which he was very appreciative of them doing. How very insensitive of them, said Ric Flair. He was told that he only had months left to live, but he fought back and he proved the doctors wrong. I had the chance to meet him in the lobby. I don't remember the name of the hotel, but I met him in the lobby of the hotel where Wrestle Reunion, the very last Wrestle Reunion convention that they ever did. This was in 2012, so 10 years ago. I believe it was the last Wrestle Reunion before WrestleCon replaced it and became a thing. But I just happened to spot him in the lobby. You know, I had left the main ballroom where all the signings were happening. And I walked out into the lobby, and there he was, and, you know, in his referee shirt, and had the chance to chat with him for a couple of minutes. I'm very happy to see him doing well. I knew he had been diagnosed with cancer. I had already known that. And he looked to be in great spirits. Just a really nice guy. More engaging, I'll say, more engaging that day than most people were inside the actual ballroom. But I'm very happy I got to meet him and Bobby Heenan that day. You know, you go through all the shit that he did. The cancer, beating it, I think it came back eventually. All the shit that he went through only to get caught by COVID. It's awful. And on a lighter, though disturbing note, this week's sad tweet comes to us from Corey Graves, who on Thursday tweeted, "If you want to know how my day is going, I just sent a lovey-dovey goodnight text for Carmella to my boss. Jet lag is real." I can picture Vince McMahon reading that text angrily and writing back, "This is all wrong," and then rewriting it for him the way that he does their television scripts. Not enough emojis, damn it. Graves and Carmella have a new reality series coming to WWE's YouTube channel on the 28th. It's basically a pilot episode. They are splitting it up into 10 4-minute episodes, and they're promising lots of nudity. If I want nudity, I know where to go, and I can tell you, it is not WWE's YouTube channel. Now, on the NXT front, I have a full review up already for Tuesday's Vengeance Day episode of NXT, which I thought was a very good show. I went live when it was over, but these are the cliff notes on that show from Tuesday. Pete Dunne got the win over Tony D'Angelo in their weaponized cage match. Dunne gets his revenge. D'Angelo continues, I think, to deliver in the ring. He's been pretty impressive over the last few months. Toxic Attraction retained their women's tag team titles over Indy Hartwell and Persia Parada. The weakest match on the show by default. It was okay. The right call, though, keeping the belts on Gigi and JC Jane. It feels early to take the belts off any of the three members of the group. LA Knight and Grayson Waller, they had a segment, and LA Knight was stomping a mud hole in him, and with each stomp, the camera just bobbed up and down, up and down. It would have been nauseating to watch a Stone Cold Steve Austin match 25 years ago with this camera work. And now, with all the rumors of him coming back, I'm dreading it already. I'm already dreading the camera work for his match at WrestleMania, if he has one. But LA Knight is going to be wrestling Grayson Waller on TV this week. LA Knight should be on Raw or SmackDown, no later than the week after WrestleMania. There was an excellent match for the North American title. Carmelo Hayes successfully defending against Cameron Grimes. And backstage later on, Pete Dunne congratulated Hayes on still being the North American champion for now. So that gives you a sense of the direction they're going in there. The Creed brothers beat MSK in the finals of the men's Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic. The only thing disappointing about this was that it went less than 10 minutes for the finals of this tournament. And what these two teams are capable of, they gave them about 9 minutes. And it only really felt like it was starting to get going, and then out of nowhere, it just ended. But with that win, the Creeds are now getting a tag team title match at Stand and Deliver in April, WrestleMania weekend. Imperium was on the show in the very next segment, standing in the ring. It was Imperium and Gunther, serenaded by chants of Walter. I hope they chant that every week until he retires. Walter said he's setting his sights now on championship gold. Solo Sikoa came out. He laid down a challenge. But It looks like Walter might be getting a title match after all at Stand and Deliver, or there's rumors of Dolph Ziggler challenging Bron Breakker WrestleMania weekend for the NXT Championship. Speaking of which, Bron Breakker had his first NXT title defense. He beat Santos Escobar. Dolph Ziggler was there. Dolph Ziggler interfered. Ciampa was there. Tommaso Ciampa fought him off. A very good main event. Hopefully not the last we've seen of Escobar in the title picture. I think he is one of the more underrated talents in the entire company. But this Tuesday, the Women's Dusty Classic will commence. We don't have any brackets yet. We know some of the teams. We know it's going to be Kaylee Ray and Io Shirai. We know Indy Hartwell and Persia Parada are going to be in there. Wendy Chu, it's looking like she's probably going to be tagging with Dakota Kai. But LA Knight is going to get Grayson Waller one-on-one. Dolph Ziggler steps into an NXT ring to take on Tommaso Ciampa. So that is the lineup for this Tuesday. We'll have the full review as normal on the podcast next Sunday. Let's go through some questions, because I got a few of them. I got a lot of them, but we'll get to a few of them here from you. You can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. I'm hoping to get through this quickly here before I lose my voice. I could feel it before I lose my voice. It's been a lot of audio this week. A lot of work. But Umar from Sheffield, England, with AEW having so many tag teams, should they either have a mid-card tag team championship, or do you think they have enough belts at this moment? Also, what about a third singles championship? I'm not a fan right now of either of those ideas. They do not need any more singles titles. They definitely do not need mid-card tag team titles. Trios belts is the way to go. If they're going to add more belts, it should be a trios championship. Muhammad from Harlem, New York. This year marks the 25th anniversary of three classic WWF matches. So between these three, buy, sell, or rent: Bret Hart against Stone Cold Steve Austin, WrestleMania 13, the 10-man tag at In Your House Canadian Stampede, and Shawn Michaels against The Undertaker at In Your House Bad Blood, first ever Hell in a Cell. I mean, for me, it's really a competition between option one and option three. All three were fantastic. I'm inclined to go with Bret and Austin at WrestleMania 13. That Hell in a Cell, it's hard to go against that Hell in a Cell, but I'll tell you, I'm going to go with Bret and Austin. WrestleMania 13, I would buy on that. I would rent the Hell in a Cell, and I would sell on the 10-man tag. Steve from Virginia, how high was Vince McMahon on RVD? I see what you did there. How high was Vince McMahon on RVD during the Invasion era? RVD main evented a pay-per-view against Steve Austin and Kurt Angle during this time. Was there any consideration of putting the world title on RVD? I had never read that. I am not of the impression that was ever considered when he initially came in. I do know that there was the plan for him to beat Triple H and win the world heavyweight title in 2002 at Unforgiven. And Triple H was able to politic his way out of that one. They did the Ric Flair heel turn. I think Flair went heel, I think, and aligned or realigned with Triple H in that match. But so no, 2002, yes, there was consideration to giving him the big gold belt, but I had never heard that about his early days when he debuted in the company. Even though he had that stint in 97 as Mr. Monday Night. But he was not officially in the... He was still an ECW star at that point. Daniel from Hamburg, Germany. Did CM Punk leaving really send Daniel Bryan to the WrestleMania 30 main event? I know Punk against Triple H was always planned for WrestleMania and Orton against Batista, but do you think they would really have gone through with that? Yes. And Daniel Bryan believes it as well. He talked about it in his book. He was going to be fifth or sixth from the top against Sheamus. So yes, CM Punk leaving, it wasn't the only thing. I think the fans had a little something to do about that as well, but CM Punk leaving, it was like the perfect storm of conditions that had to come together, but it did. And yes, that was a very big part of why he ended up against Triple H in the opener, and then ended up walking out with the two titles in the main event. And Andrew in the Bronx, with an email titled, King Kong Bundy Champion. I always felt when they did the squash angle with King Kong Bundy literally squashing Hulk Hogan to set up their match at WrestleMania 2, that it should have been in a match, as opposed to an interview segment that they as they did it. To me, it would have made much more sense for Hogan to drop the belt to Bundy before WrestleMania, maybe at Saturday night's main event, and win it back at Mania. Just imagine how much better the promos would have been, and also imagine Bobby Heenan walking to the cage proudly holding the belt. Also, if you do the match the same, there's a point where Bundy is half out of the cage, so instead of being on the verge of winning the belt, he's on the verge of successfully defending it. To me, it would have made the match better, just wondering your thoughts on this. I disagree on that last part. I disagree completely. I think the real drama is people thinking, oh my god, this guy's about to take the title away from Hulk Hogan. So, I disagree on that last point. Could you have put the belt on Bundy before WrestleMania and had Hogan win it back? Yes, you could have, but that's just not the way they did things back then. It's not the way they did things. A lot of those guys had very long title reigns, and they built everything around them. You know, they were the Golden Goose. Hogan was the Golden Goose. And they wanted him as the champion on the road, making all those shots, defending the title against the Heenan family and all the big heels. That's why, you know, Bruno got a long reign, Backlund got a long reign, Hogan got 4.5 years as the champion. Even Savage. You know, when Savage got the belt, he was champion for a year. And by the standards of that time, that was a short run. By the standards of today, it would be pretty impressive. So I think things worked out, you know, the way they did, you know, for a reason. I think it's fine. You could have done it, yeah, you could have. But, I mean, it wouldn't have made that much of a difference, I think, as far as selling the match. I think the drama was people actually believing there for a second that Bundy might win the belt from Hogan. So anyway, if you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. There's plenty of others I wasn't able to get to here, but I do read everything you guys send me. Some of them I'll try to respond directly. Just understand, I read everything, I just cannot... I cannot possibly directly respond to everything that I'm backlogged with right now. I wish I could, but you never know when your question might end up on the podcast, or I might even borrow and use it in some of our members-only video Q&As that I do on YouTube from time to time. So that is the place to email me. Do follow me on Twitter @Solomonster. On Instagram, it's TheSolomonster. That is my handle on there. Thank you to all. I think we picked up about 8 or 9 new channel members alone yesterday during the Elimination Chamber stream, which is amazing. And we are a hair away from 300 channel members. That's like, to me, that's the next big holy grail number, is to hit 300. And we're right there. So if you're thinking about joining and becoming a member, now would be a great time. Hell, you might be number 300. I can't say you get a prize for it or anything, but you may end up being a member number 300 on the channel. We do the occasional live call-in shows, open up the phone lines for members only. Again, you get bonus video Q&A videos. I've done hour-long Q&As for channel members. There's retro audio. If you're on the Legends tier, you have access to the lost episodes as I am uploading them right now. The first 13 shows that I have ever done, first 13 sound-offs, are up in the archives for channel members. In fact, episode 13 just went up this week from Super Bowl Sunday 2008. My live thoughts from Madison Square Garden at the Royal Rumble. John Cena's big shocking return. Brock Lesnar's UFC debut against Frank Mir when Brock lost. So it's all in there. Episode 13 up right now. I'm going to be back with you from 13. We go all the way to episode 745. That's how far we've come. That's going to be next Sunday. I believe that'll be the final... How many more weekends do we have in this month? I think we have one more, right? That'll be the final sound-off of the month. Revolution's coming up. Before you know it, WrestleMania is going to be here. It's going to be a busy time. And I hope you'll join me for all of it. So until then, be well, stay safe. Have yourselves a great President's Day if you're getting off from work for the holiday. And I will see you live on YouTube Wednesday night for the Dynamite stream and right back here for 7:45 next Sunday. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Funny you bring up L.A. Knight. You know, L.A. Knight is a guy who I've spoken very highly of. Would he not be somebody that you think they could use right now on SmackDown? He's not one of their younger guys. Why is he not helping them now when they need the help? I thought developmental in NXT was building for the future. Why is a guy like that still down there? Well, you have this guy who's pretty damn good, has charisma for days, and could help you right now. So why not get him on up? It boggles the mind.
The Solomonster sounds off. Each week, bursting with content. Podcasts, predictions, reviews, YouTube live streams, and more. Become a channel member for perks and follow the Solomonster on Twitter at Solomonster.
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 Solomonster sounds off.